session number 24729, Reel 6.
Mr. Mason, Reel 6. We're talking about your time based at St. Evil, Cornwall, from August 42 onwards. What's the next thing you remember, the sort of operations that were happening?
Well, we had one interesting one in on the 13th September. The Navy got a bit tired of these tunny boats coming too far out, and they sent a couple of destroyers out to pick them up. And we had been dropping leaflets on them, which were to encourage them to come to England. And after a couple of weeks dropping leaflets on them, the Navy sent out two destroyers and picked up any that were, in their view, too far out, and brought them back to Cornwall.
What's the next thing?
Well, we continued doing this until the end of September, and on the 23rd of September we moved to Gosport, where there was a maintenance unit for all our aircraft to be serviced and for us to prepare to go overseas. We didn't know where. We hoped it would be America, because one Hudson squadron had gone to the Caribbean to help them, and we thought we might be following. But we were there for a month while they...
September, October. What sort of maintenance were they doing?
Well, they were doing a major service, because once the aircraft went overseas, it was written off. It was... we didn't know when we would next get them serviced or whatever, and as I say, we didn't know where we were going. The most unfortunate thing was that our particular aircraft, which was brought out for an air test on the 26th of October, I went with the maintenance unit pilot for it to be approved. And as we took off, a thunderstorm broke over the aerodrome. Now, as no doubt you know, if there's a heavy thunderstorm, the wind always goes into a thunderstorm from every direction. So we took off. It was howling rain, and the pilot decided he'd just go around, do a circuit, and land again. But of course, the people on the ground were waiting to see us do this, because while we were doing a circuit, the wind swung through 180 degrees. So when we landed on wet grass, the minute you put your brakes on, you went twice as fast, and the tail came up. And we finished up going through a couple of hedges off the aerodrome and wrapped the aircraft round a tree.
What was it like being in a forced landing like that, or crash landing?
Well, there's not a lot you can do. You have to go with it and hope for the best.
Was it frightening?
Well, it... I don't... Well, you... yes, you were disturbed, but you were sort of trying hard to make sure that whatever happened, you've got away with it. Unfortunately, we did. It didn't catch fire or anything, and... But that was the aircraft that we were going to take away with us, so we had to have another one. And then on the 30th of October, we flew to Predanek. The squadron now leaving the squadron now officially left Coast Command and became part of Combined Operations.
And where's Predanic?
That is in Cornwall, on the Lizard. And on the 3rd of November, we flew from Predanic to Portreath, which is on the north coast of Cornwall, and that was the aerodrome from which aircraft left the country. It was the sort of departure point for all aircraft going overseas. And we flew on the 5th from Portreath to Gibraltar. And we, as navigation officer, I'd been issued with a stack of sealed maps for each aircraft. And on the 7th of November, I imagine, we were allowed to open them. And at 6:45 on the 8th of November, I was airborne covering the convoy landing troops at Oran.
Now, what do you remember of that?
Well, in our ignorance, of course, we thought that French North Africa was French, and so, you know, there wouldn't be much trouble there, but, of course, the Germans had got quite a lot of aircraft. And we, in fact, were fortunate in that there were three of us covering the Oran era, and both of the other aircraft were shot up by fighters, and we weren't. But
what were you actually doing? I mean, when you say covering them, what were you doing?
Well, we were... we knew, of course, that there were U-boats in the Mediterranean, and that they would want to attack them. And also, we didn't know whether any ships might come across from Toulon, from the French Navy, to interfere. The Americans had been in cahoots with the people in North Africa and believed them to be on our side. But nobody knew until we'd done it.
So you flew this flight from Gibraltar?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And not, for you it was a routine, nothing happened?
Well, it was exciting in that, you know, you've got lots of ships and troops landing and a lot going on.
A lot to see.
And you didn't know what might happen. And... we were fairly busy then because on the 10th we did a convoy escort to more ships coming into the Mediterranean. On the 12th we were again did a sweep into the Mediterranean, and on the 13th, we did a sweep into the Atlantic from Gibraltar, and we came across a U-boat.
Now, what happened then? That's the 12th.
Yes, and the sea was pretty choppy, and... we didn't see the U-boat until we were about 5 miles away from it. And we were flying at 3,000 feet. And by the time we got to it, it had submerged. But as it submerged, it wasn't altering course. So we dropped our deck charges ahead of where it had submerged. You could still see a swirl in the water where it had gone down. So we dropped four depth charges across the track, you know, about a length or a couple of lengths ahead of where it had gone down. And in fact, it wasn't until about 1992 I discovered that the U-boat was U-411 and we had in fact sunk it.
How were they certain it was that one, the U-411?
Sorry?
How did they know?
We didn't know then, but this is from the records which were looked at after the war. Books I bought since John Terrain's book on the U-boat war, he gives U-411 as probably sunk by the Navy. And then a book came out in about 1992, which was the result of analysing all the RAF and the U-boat records. And from this, it was decided that we had in fact sunk it, because it was known to be in that position, and it wasn't heard from again. So, a bit late to get any credit, but it was interesting to find that we had in fact sunk it.
At the time, you didn't make a claim particularly.
No, we didn't make any claim. The Admiralty used to analyse all U-boat attacks, and they came back and sort of said, well, you did all you could, but, you know, we can't assess it as doing anything. Well, we continued.
And that was the first submarine depth charge?
Was the first that we'd attacked.
So after the 12th?
And so then we went on doing sweeps to the west and the east of Gibraltar, and one was interesting on the 17th of November, because we flew around a submarine which surrendered to one of our aircraft. The aircraft attacked it, and the batteries were damaged, so it started filling with chlorine gas, and so the crew came out and they put a white flag up and surrendered.
Do you know which U-boat that was?
And that U-boat, in fact, was U-331. I have a photograph of it there. U-331. Which was the U-boat which sank the battleship Barham in the other end of the Mediterranean the year before.
So it surrendered to one of your
Squadron Leader Patterson was flying the aircraft.
And what happened to it? I mean, well, how could they enforce the surrender?
Now, you see, this was interesting, because he was running out of petrol, and several aircraft, like us, stayed with it. We couldn't stay long, we were low on petrol. And a couple of others stayed with it for a while. Squadron Leader Patterson, meanwhile, flew to Algiers, got in touch with the Navy, and they were going to send a destroyer out to pick it up. He then flew back to keep over it. And just over the horizon was the aircraft carrier, the Formidable. And they, of course, had heard the report of the attack, and they didn't mess about. They sent a fighter and an albacore, I think, with a torpedo, which sank the U-boat.
So they didn't actually accept the surrender, really, then?
They didn't, well...
The crew didn't get away.
Their argument was, I suppose, that, you know, it had got to be destroyed. But I would think that they probably got a rocket afterwards, because the destroyer could possibly have picked it up. But it also meant, of course, that some of the U-boat crew were lost after they surrendered. And U-boat captain who survived was very vitriolic about it afterwards. Things then went on.
What was the base like at Gibraltar? Can you describe it a bit?
Well, Gibraltar was absolutely packed. We lived in Nissen huts, but for the landings in North Africa, it was you couldn't move because they needed so many aircraft. They were delivering Spitfires by sea to the docks, and they took them out of their cases, and they built them on the road between the docks and the aerodrome. When they got to the aerodrome, they were complete. They tested the guns and stacked them. So you had hundreds of fighters stacked. You got two Hudson squadrons operating. And so it was pretty chock-a-block. And then on the morning of the landings, I don't know when the people were flown in, but I imagine the day before, we were too busy with our own thing. They flew in fighter pilots who got in the Spitfires and set out for North Africa. And in fact, when they set out, they didn't know whether there'd be an aerodrome for them when they got there. But fortunately, there was. So it was, Gibraltar was, you know, a bit of a beehive, you know, it really was. And anyway, then on the 19th of November, we moved to Blida, which is Blida, which is about, 20 miles southwest of Algiers. It was a French aerodrome, and we took over accommodation that had been used by French colonial troops. And the only way to make it livable in was to set fire to it. They had iron bedsteads which we doused with petrol and set alight, and we even poured petrol on the walls and set it alight. It was absolutely, absolutely alive. And then we started to operate from Blida. And I did one convoy escort. And then on the 27th of November, I was collared to go and fly in a bow fighter. A squadron of bow fighters, 600 squadron, which were night fighters, had come to Blida, ready to operate as night fighters, but to get to North Africa, they'd flown direct over France, and so they hadn't got their radar. This was coming by sea, so they couldn't do anything until it arrived. But some bright air staff man decided it would be a good idea to use a bow fighter with a fighter pilot and a coastal navigator to do some reconnaissance. And so on the 27th, we flew to Maison Blanche, the aerodrome at Algiers, to be briefed for a special reconnaissance. Now, the only thing that worried us was that day, the Germans had gone into Vichy, France, and we thought they were going to ask us to fly to Toulon and see what had happened to the French fleet. But fortunately, they didn't. They wanted us to fly to Beaune, which was our most advanced aerodrome, and to do reconnaissance of Bizerta in Tunisia and Cagliari in Sardinia. The story was that there was a convoy coming to Bizerta with supplies which had left Naples, and they didn't know whether it was going to go via Sicily or Sardinia. And so they had got bow fighters at Malta to cover Sicily, and they wanted us to cover Sardinia to visit her. So off we went in all our innocence, and arrived at Bowen on the 28th, and immediately went off to have a look, see if we could see a convoy. Well, as we took off, the aerodrome was being bombed. After we took off, we found ourselves surrounded by German aircraft who had just been bombing the aerodrome. We then realised that in our bow fighter, which looks very much like a Junkers 88, we were in the only twin-engined RAF plane east of Algiers, and Bowen was a Spitfire aerodrome, and they were coming up to look for the 88s, so we diverted fairly quickly. And anyway, we went on to Bizerta, nothing there, and we went on to Cagliari, and it was quite interesting. In the docks there were 8 U-boats. I said one cruiser, but whether it was or a destroyer, 3 MTBs, and on the lake inside Cagliari there were 13 seaplanes. So I sat in the back of the bow fighter making a little sketch of all this, and when I looked up there were 2 German fighters diving down on us, who opened fire almost the minute I looked up. Fortunately they missed us, because I immediately shouted to the pilot, who couldn't see them, he was looking the other way. And so we hit the deck and went home.
What, just went, flew back low?
Very low.
But they didn't bother you again?
No, they didn't. They didn't follow us. So so that was the 28th. On the 29th, we did the reconnaissance again to Bizerta and Cagliari. On the way back, we shot down an Italian seaplane.
What do you remember of that?
That was a Cant 506B, which we presume was on a reconnaissance, but it very likely was. It could easily have been an air sea rescue one, but anyway, after the day before, the pilot was feeling a bit brassed off, so he didn't mess about. And then we did the reconnaissance again on the 30th. Each night after we did the reconnaissance, we had to go to the docks and report to the Navy on a cruiser. I forget the name of it, but they had a cruiser. I think they had 2 cruisers, and they would have intercepted the convoy if it had come the Sardinia direction. But in fact it didn't, and it went via Sicily, and the Navy did in fact sink the whole lot. They sank all the merchant ships and all the escort, so they did a worthwhile effort. So on the 2nd of December we flew back to Bleda and back to normal.
So that's where you're going to be based for a while, Bleda?
Sorry?
You were based at Bleda from the
7th? Yes, we were there, well, for 6 months or more, the squadron was. Anyway, having got back the next day, the 3rd of December, we went off on a 90 submarine sweep, and again we saw a U-boat. And it's very interesting that we saw this. We were at 7,500 feet, and I estimated it was 20 miles away. but the sea was glassy calm, and a U-boat has a very wide bow wave. Of course, it's got a blunt nose, and so you could see a line across the sea. And so we had a deco through binoculars, and there was a dot in the middle of the line. And now, we were 20 miles away, and we got 30 seconds after they saw us. So what we did was fly, turn to starboard, so we were into the sun, and we attacked it out of the sun. And we caught it completely on the surface. It was just about beginning to submerge as we got there. They left two people on the conning tower, and we dropped four depth charges on it. And that is the...
That's a picture you took, or who took that?
Yes, they were taken on a mirror camera. So as you flew over, it was taken.
Did you sink it, or what happened?
Well, we didn't get... We thought... Well, we know we damaged it, because there was quite a bit of rubbish on the surface afterwards. And there are the depth charges going off, and as you see...
This is in your logbook we're looking at now.
They were... You can't see the U-boat, so... It hadn't had time to submerge, so it must have been in the middle of that lot.
And do you know the number of this U-boat? And do you know what it was?
No,
sunk?
I've tried very hard to sort it out, and I my only guess is it might be U-73, because I've read since of the U-boats that were about at that time, and this U-boat 73 was in dock, damaged at the end of the month. So I think that it was possibly U-73. By the look of it, it is an early one. It's not one of the later ones. So that I think my guess is probably right. So we only damaged it and it got home. Probably because it hadn't gone down far enough. You see, your depth charges went off at 25 feet. And the first U-boat we attacked, it would just about be at the right level by the time they went off. This would not have got down, and so the depth charges would probably lift it up, but not damage it. Well, damage it, but not break the pressure hull and sink it.
And this was the 3rd of December?
Yes.